Death Spiral, the only anime podcast that got its start as dueling street sermons. We are back. We are protesting Thanksgiving with a short episode. I will not indulge anyone. If you thought you would just get away from your family by listening to this episode, sorry, you're going to have to talk to your uncle.
Oh, no.
I don't make the rules. I'm sorry.
Listen, we all know that there's nothing to be thankful for in the realm of anime this year. Obviously, the world has given us nothing. Dandadan being an exception. I don't count that.
This is the year that Sony bought Kadokawa, or maybe not. I'm not sure if that went through.
Let's be honest. The deal is not in writing yet, but we all know what's going to happen. To my understanding, you know, most of what they want to do is acquire the, you know, manga and anime publishing rights that Kadokawa has. And Kadokawa says, like, no, you gotta buy us all. We want that bag.
Well, yeah, they don't really have anything else that's worthwhile. Sony just wants to own the means of anime production, you know?
Keep it out of the hands of those grubby anime fans.
Yeah, they want to, there's someone, almost like an anime villain, who's like, power justifies all, and only I will have the power to create anime. I will save it from these plebeians who keep putting out fucking light novel adaptations.
Is Sony the demon king of the anime world?
They're the demon king of a lot of worlds.
Exercise equipment, washers and dryers, car components, all of it. All of it.
Yep. Now, Kadokawa is stuff like Mayonaka Punch, Ishira, Oshinoko, Higurashi, obviously. They put out Decadence, which is really good. Astra, Lost in Space, which I only read the manga of, but I really liked. They, of course, published The Melancholy of Haruhi Suzumiya and Konosuba.
Well, I think you're ignoring the big one that kind of has everybody paying attention to this to begin with, right?
I said Oshinoko.
Oh, okay, excuse me. I'm talking about something slightly less culturally significant, but still up there, and that is that Kadokawa owns a majority of FromSoft.
Oh, that. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, sure. I guess. So it's a real mixed bag all around.
But possibility of Bloodborne 2, maybe? I don't know. I'd take that deal. If they said, yes, we own all of it now, but you're definitely getting Bloodborne 2, and it's going to be a PC release, then sure, why not?
And there will be a limited pre-order bonus where you can unlock alternate costumes from ReZero.
Oh, I was going to say they should do a you know, crossover promotional DLC with Stellar Blade.
Oh, God. Okay, well, even though this is a shorter anime, we are packed full with anime shit. We've got anime stuff all over the place. I got some manga. I've got some topics.
I'm stepping in some right now.
Nate's watched some anime.
Okay. Well, let's start. Let's get some announcements out of the way that I think we both individually have some excitement for these two things.
Sure.
You have talked about many times on this show, many, many times. Practically can't go an episode without you mentioning the manga The Summer Hikaru Died.
Yes, well, I am an ally.
I was surprised. Everything I know about that story, I don't know how. I'm assuming probably pretty significant, but it's being marketed more. I need to back up. Netflix announced so the Summer Hikaru Died anime. That's coming out. It's being produced by Netflix. It's probably going to be here pretty soon, it looks like, by the trailer. And they are straight up marketing it as a BL anime story and not like an existential horror.
Well, it is both. I mean, make no mistake. This is a story much like, you know, the horror in recent years using cosmic terror as an allegory for something a little closer to home. Like, let's say, being gay in a small town in Japan, which is also terrifying.
You should really
read this. I don't know why you're not reading this. It's really fucking good.
How long is it? How many chapters did that end up being? Was it just like a short form?
It's not done. No, it's not done. It's still going. It's still going. It's been going for a long time.
What studio is producing the anime? Obviously, Netflix is the one importing it.
Let's see. How many chapters have been released?
Oh,
so far 28 chapters.
Summer Hikari died. Kadokawa. Just saying.
Kadokawa. Obviously, Kadokawa. Soon to be Sony. When Sony buys it, they'll take all the gay stuff out.
Oh, no. So this is being produced by Cygames Pictures, which, hey, you know what else they produce?
Oh, God. What?
Uma Musume.
Oh, my God.
And Idolmaster, and let's see, some other notables here. Princess Connect Redive.
Kokoro Connect.
And Brave Bang Bravern. Do you remember that one from a couple from last year?
Yes. Yes, I do.
I did not watch it. Did you watch that one, Brave Bang Bravern?
No, I avoided that particular one.
I don't know. That one got some pretty good word of mouth, I'm going to be honest, that I heard about it. It looked, from what I've seen, the clips, it has some really nice big robot animation in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And some hunky beefcake guys. So
sure.
What more do you need?
You know, it's weird to say, but I'm not super into a lot of giant robot anime. Not really my thing.
But you are into the beefcakes.
I'll take a beefcake. I'm not opposed to a beefcake, but I find there are a lot of giant robot anime and not a lot of worthwhile ones.
I was actually thinking about that myself the other day, specifically about, like, giant robo anime and
mecha.
It is such a ubiquitous genre in anime and, like, within Japan. And like the majority of anime and manga, it just, most of mecha anime does not get official translations or dubbing. Official subtitles in a Western market. And so what I've seen, my personal experience with mecha anime is like just the absolute mega hits that were big enough to make a splash outside of that cultural bubble, right?
Sure, you know, we're talking about our Gundams.
Gundam, Evangelion.
Your SSS Gridmans.
Mm-hmm.
Your Escaflones, your Knights of Cydonia,
your Razaphons.
Your Razaphons, of course. Mm-hmm. Your Gundams, even more.
Lots of Gundams. A whole lot of
Gundams. Lots
Gundam.
Of Gundams.
I'm gonna say it's a lot of Gundam.
Full Metal Panic. I guess you could call Macross. Macross is a
well
they turn into giant robots, right?
Yeah, Macross, I think, is kind of like a retroactive thing because it was originally popular in America as Robotech, remember?
Oh, right. Yes, right. I forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah. They literally did that thing that they did with the original Godzilla movie, you know, where they just cut out all the monster bits and then edited in white people on the ground. That's what they did with Robotech. They just edited out all of the robot parts and redubbed all of the talking to make it a story and plot that had nothing to do with Macross.
You gotta love it. You gotta love it. What was that one? What was that one? Eureka 7.
Remember that one? It's pronounced Eureka.
Eureka?
Eureka.
I don't think that's right. That can't be right. That can't possibly be
it's
true.
It's spelled Eureka. It is spelled Eureka, and that is how it's pronounced in the show. It's
oh, I hate that.
Oh, I couldn't make it past like 10 episodes because of it. And you know it's the official pronunciation because that's the way the dub says it too.
Oh God,
they were instructed, they were given explicit instructions to pronounce it Eureka instead of Eureka.
That's bad. It's awful.
Also, it was kind of weird because, like, the robots were also surfers and also plants at the same time. It got a little muddled in its theming.
They were surfer plants?
Yeah. So the robots are born out of giant plants, or more like the special anime girls that you need to pilot the big robots were born from giant plants.
Oh, well, of course. I mean, obviously.
I mean, that's a concept that they just full-on ripped off from Trigun.
That's I've seen Outlaw Star.
Trigun, Outlaw Star, Plant Girls. Yeah.
Plant Girls, obviously.
And then you have to have a scared Japanese boy being the actual pilot. And he is a surfer, a wind surfer. You know, they have these kind of like Back
a
to the
wind
Future.
Well,
they
it's
have Back
even
to the
surfer,
Future anti-gravity surfboards, right? So they're doing a Marty McFly thing, but if the DeLorean was bipedal.
I don't like any of that. Gurren Lagann, of course.
Mm-hmm, Gurren Lagann.
Don't say it. What are these pronunciations? I don't like them. You know what my favorite giant mech show is? Well, not show, because I only read the manga. My favorite giant mech manga?
What? What is your favorite?
Is Boku Rano.
Was there a big mech in that?
Yeah. It's about a big mech. It's about a big mech that runs on children.
What?
It runs on children as its fuel.
Is this like the orphan machine like parable thought experiment? What if you had a giant robot that could fight monsters, but you had to throw an orphan into it every hour to run it?
The Omelas.
Yeah.
Now how do you pronounce that? Omelas or Omelas?
God,
the ones who walk away from Omelas. That was the Ursula K. Le Guin story.
The curse of Ursula K. Le Guin. In my head I always said Omelas.
Omelas.
But yeah. But I wouldn't be surprised if it was Omelas.
Well, I always thought of Omelas as the plural, like there was more than one Omela. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that's true. I think there's only one Omelas.
It's just the one Omelas.
Omelas. Omelas. I don't like that. I don't like that.
I don't like that. Omelas. It rolls off the tongue better.
But as I said before, when I talked about Boku Rano a long time ago, Boku Rano is like if Evangelion was as smart as it thinks it is. But I really like Boku Rano, and I really think people need to, if they want shit like Evangelion, you are missing the fuck out, because this is the real shit. Boku Rano is so incredibly intense. And it does not really fuck around when it comes to its message and themes, to the point where when they went to make the anime, the series director was like, I gotta lighten this shit up. I don't know how to make this anime. I'm gonna have to change the ending and stuff. Yeah, I think one of the things he said was like halfway through the show, he came out and he said, I don't like the manga. It's too fucked up. I gotta change it.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so, hey, if you like Evangelion and that kind of shit, Boku Rano is right there, and it is the best one.
You want to know what my favorite off-brand mecha anime is?
Getter Robo.
That's a good guess. That's not bad, but no.
Is it Big O?
It's not Big O. Big O is great, though. Big O is... I'm not going to clown on that. That's legitimately good. Good stuff.
And it's not Full Metal Panic.
It's not Full Metal Panic, but it is Batman. Big O is Batman with big robots.
Yeah, I know. I've seen it.
It's even got the Joker in it. And the Joker has a big robot.
Oh, really? I don't remember that part.
Yeah, you know the guy that has all the bandages over his face?
I did not watch it that much.
Oh, man, you should go back and watch Big O. It's a good one. I like that.
I'll get right on that.
Yeah, I was referring to Alien Defender Geo Armor 1944.
Oh, no. Is that an alternate history about World War II?
You know it is.
Oh, God.
It is about a Japanese boy, an orphan, a war orphan. It starts off very similar to Grave of the Fireflies, actually, which should really give it a lot of
Jesus Christ.
Artistic gravitas, right?
Oh, man. That is... Oh, that really hurts my heart to,
yeah,
to hear
that. Yeah, no, it's really messed up. It starts off with his family dying in the firebomb, the Tokyo firebombings.
Sure.
And then he subsequently stows away on an American battleship, goes to Germany, and meets up with an underground resistance, like, fighter group who build giant robots in order to fight the alien invaders that are actually controlling the Axis powers.
Uh-huh.
Yes. So in this alternate history, Hitler, not genocidal, not even nationalistic, honestly. He's just being mind-controlled by aliens.
Just misunderstood, huh?
Just a misunderstood German artist who got caught up in a alien plot way above his pay grade.
And does that one, are the robots also powered by plant ladies?
No, they're powered by steam. They are, in fact, steampunk robots.
Oh, steam-powered. Okay, steampunk. Wow, I hate every part of this.
Yeah.
It sounds repugnant in every way.
Their most powerful robot looks kind of like a plastic toy version of an early Zaku design.
Weird.
It's not great. It's got like these big you remember the underwater Zakus, right?
Yes.
And they have like those big turbines on their shoulders that they use to swim around.
Right.
It looks kind of like that. It looks kind of like that, but it is gold.
But with a chimney stack?
Yes, and a chimney stack.
God damn it, I hate that.
Oh, also, eventually, they upgrade the robots to be nuclear-powered.
Oh, of course they do. They gotta. Mm-hmm. Oppenheimer, right?
Yep.
The deleted scenes.
Everyone remembers that Oppenheimer scene.
You know, they really, after the 90s, they stopped doing the thing where, like, your robot needed, like, a virgin maiden to, like, run the cyber brain or whatever. That kind of fell off.
Well, I think it took a tonal shift to instead the virgin is now just the direct pilot of the robot, right?
Yeah, after Ava came out, they were like, we'll just make the virgin the pilot.
Yeah.
Everybody seems to like that.
It saves on animation costs. You only have to draw one character.
Only one virgin. we are way off track. What anime did you actually watch?
Oh, man. Okay. Well, okay. I'm going to throw out there real quick. The other news I wanted to bring up was...
Oh, there's more.
You and I are polar opposites. And a manga I talked about a quirky girl and a boring-ass dude dating for no apparent reason and notable by their complete lack of chemistry, is finally getting the anime it deserves.
Oh, thank God.
So once again,
so happy for
thank
them.
You, Sony Kadokawa. You're doing the Lord's work.
That's great. I'm really happy about that. Because we definitely didn't have enough rom-coms about like a guy and a girl who obviously don't belong with each other somehow getting together.
I know.
Really and needed more of those.
It's increasingly rare in these days, which is why I was so surprised when I watched the first few episodes of Pseudo Haram. Don't pronounce it like that.
Is it haram? Is it haram? Are pseudos haram?
I think harems are not haram. I think they're explicitly kosher.
Yeah.
No, once again, I have been scraping the bottom of the barrel from the last few anime seasons, trying to wring all of the trashy rom-com juice I can out of this goddamn country. And
yes, of course.
This is the one I finally settled on this week, Pseudo Harem, which is... Are you familiar with the plot of this at all?
I believe I did read a synopsis that said, and this might be a different one entirely, but this is the one about the kid who, like... is not really dating the girl who will pretend to be lots of different girls. Is that right?
Yeah. It's honestly, it's pretty fucked up, their dynamic.
It's convoluted right off the bat.
Okay, so So we start off with the female lead, and it is her. She's a first year in high school, first day of school. She wants to join the acting club because she loves acting and she loves
anime.
Yes,
right. She's an actress, which is the one detail that I was that I had remembered, and that like this is like acting practice for her or something like that.
Well, they make it explicit right off the bat, at least in the anime, that she has like a pretty big crush on this guy.
Okay.
She seems to genuinely find him like fun to talk to and engaging and and is interested.
Charming and attractive.
Yeah, charming and attractive in a way that he's 100% not in any way.
Yeah, they really, that's one of the biggest holes with these things, right? Is they never seem to come up with a reason why the character would be attractive. Like, I read one, did I ever tell you about the one where the girl is attracted to the boy, but it's because she likes the taste of his sweat?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Or like, what was the other one? Mystery Girlfriend X, where she likes the taste of his spit?
Yeah, Mysterious Girlfriend X. Yes, yes, yes. That is, she actually does thought transference through bodily secretions, I'll say.
I don't like that sentence.
In those cases, at least there is a very concrete reason why these people would be like colliding with each other, you know?
No,
when it's made vague, like stories like this, where it's just a guy, really strains any kind of credulity.
And I can't stress enough that he is just a guy.
Yeah.
He is part of the acting club with her. He's technically her senpai. You know, he's a second year, she's a first year. And his, right off the bat, his first words to her after she joins the acting club is, "Man, it sucks so much that I'm like in the prime of my life and I don't have a harem right now." Who starts a conversation that way?
Damn, I wish I had a harem. What do you think, girl I barely know?
And her knee-jerk reaction to that is, well, I could be your harem, in the sense that, like you said earlier, she, using her advanced knowledge of anime and light novel tropes, proceeds to
her senior level knowledge.
Oh, it is top CIA directory knowledge. She's got all the secrets.
Yeah,
using her advanced spy techniques, she decides that in order to, again, for no foreseeable reason that I can tell, she just wants to grant this guy his one wish of having a harem. And so her plan is to just act individually like all of the different like anime girl tropes that you see in anime. So like the sporty tomboy one and the tsundere.
Right.
And the cool class representative type.
Yeah. What about the sleepy one?
Haven't seen the sleepy one yet, but I bet it's in there.
Hasn't got around to the sleepy one.
No, her signature, as she says, is the mischievous devil girl. And I'm still trying to figure out what that means, because that is not a trope archetype that I had previously heard of or considered.
Is that the one where, like, she negs him?
Kinda. I think it's trying to do, like, a Nagatoro thing. Yeah, like, makes fun of him. But,
a teasing thing.
Yeah, a teasing thing, you know, playing pranks on him and stuff. And it, I don't know. It all comes together to just paint a picture of a character who is so pathetically desperate for any kind of like approval from a senior figure that she will debase herself in the most like embarrassing ways possible.
Yeah.
And I can't, like, another thing about this guy that I want to say that if he was like, "Wow, you don't really have to do all that. Like, this is weird for me." Like, and she was insistent on, like, acting out all of these tropes for him based off of, like, one weird comment he made. That would be almost defensible. It still wouldn't be great, but,
sure,
like, I could see where the plot was coming from. But no, he is like full on. He's like, "Oh wow, that's awesome of you. I'm going to take full advantage of this situation." like, he comes off as a real scumbag.
Yeah, I'm a high school boy with no empathy and no understanding of the world. Why don't I just take advantage of this lonely girl who clearly is, like, desperate for me?
So, okay, so, like, in at the end, the scene at the end of the first episode, he asks her to come to the club room and have tea with him. And the gag, because they were obviously playing it for laughs in the framing of the episode,
yeah,
is that he keeps doing this scenario where he invites her in to have tea with him, but then he keeps asking her to redo it over and over as each different character, eventually, like, culminating with him asking her to put on a Nekomimi outfit,
no,
like the cat
no,
ears and,
no,
and the paws and everything.
No, this is not okay.
It's not okay, and she
That's
does it,
okay.
And it's very uncomfortable, to be honest.
Y'all, this isn't okay. You can't do this. Like, people are emotionally vulnerable. It is not good to take advantage of them in this way. It's bad. It's bad, actually.
It's a bad thing, and he is a bad person for doing
it. Clearly. And do you think they're going to get around to, like, her tragic backstory? Like, stock tragic backstory one?
Well, we got a couple flashes. I wouldn't call it tragic yet, but I could see if it's, like, preliminarily setting up for a you know, tragic backstory. We
sure.
get a couple flashbacks of her middle school experience where she joined a class play and was praised, you know, quite a bit for how well she did in it.
Sure.
And that's why she wants to be an actress now.
Yeah, it's fun when people tell you you're good at something.
Yeah, and I can see them maybe setting this up as, like, oh, you know, obviously that was her first taste of validation, right? And that's why she's so obsessed with playing out this bit where she gets to act out all these characters for this one dude.
Yeah.
But at a certain point, like, it becomes very obvious that she's not doing it for the acting practice, right?
Yeah.
Like, she's, like I said, she seems to be genuinely wanting this guy's romantic attention.
She's just thirsty.
Probably because she's thirsty and you know, wants the boy attention, and she is getting it from the absolute worst person available.
Yeah, that sucked. The reason I asked that is because, like, I just read a whole new stock of stuff. I restocked recently, and I read something called Hyaku Manju Labyrinth. Hyaku Manju Labyrinth by Takemichi. And I really liked it. It's only like 23 chapters, and it's about these two women who are trapped in, like, an endless maze. And it goes weird places from there. That's just the premise in the first chapter. But one of the girls loves being there because she loves video games and, like, going out of bounds in video games and discovering bugs and stuff. So that's her approach to solving the labyrinth, mm-hmm. is she keeps trying to break it. And then we get halfway through, we kind of get her story, and she has the tragic backstory one, where she is obsessed with video games because she, like, receded from society because she's a child of divorce, and her dad was an alcoholic who may or may not have tried to sexually assault her, so she became a weirdo.
Okay, that particular backstory of the nerd who hates their life in society and recedes into playing RPGs, right? That always brings up the mental image of a Far Side comic for me. The one where it's like two parents and they're proudly looking down at their son playing video games and they're
yes.
imagining all of the job opportunities for professional video game players.
Yes, yes, yes. I remember that one very clearly. Yeah, it's a good one. But it's just, you know, that is whenever you just need, like, a character reason for something, especially when it comes to a female character, they just insert this one. It just slides so easily into any, like, justification of any kind of female behavior.
Hey, how do we make these male losers sympathize with this female character?
Oh, yeah. You know, it's just parents are divorced. Probably some form of sexual assault. Boom. You got a girl who's weird. Easy peasy. Just dust your hands off. You're done. This shows up in everything, basically.
I mean, it's disgustingly reductive of, you know, the whole situation, but I see where they're coming from.
When, I mean, it constantly, again, you know, no expert Japanese society. I don't assume that real life is anything like manga, but the frequency of these stories, they only present two options. One, this is just the absolute laziest stock backstory for any female character. Or two, Jesus fucking Christ, being a woman in Japan sounds like an absolute fucking nightmare.
I mean, it can be both things. I'm just saying.
Maybe it's both things. Okay. Well, on that tip, I do want to just, let me throw you some of the stuff that I've been reading. Just a couple.
Yes, please do. Let me see into that mind of yours.
Let me just go over my stock really quickly. The main theme of my stock here was short stories. Like I said, I read that one, which was only 23 chapters. I also read a bunch of one-shots. Because, you know, an angle we don't really talk about is, like, the manga competition. We hear about it a lot in the terms of, like, oh, this manga author is coming up. Like, he won a manga, you know, newcomer award or whatever, and now he has a serialization.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
we barely ever go back and read the one-shot, right? Or at least I don't, you know.
I mean, I don't.
Yeah, I think a lot of people don't.
But then again, I can't read.
Well, you should, because some of these are good. In fact, some of these are better than the serialization. But I did read a few different things. One of them is the one I promised I would pass off to you, which is the Gyaru who plays Magic the Gathering story, which is called Today is Miss Kurosaki's Turn 2. Which is about one of these completely milquetoast, boring dudes who cannot believe that the Gyaru in his class wants to meet up with him in private so that they can play Magic together. And she can complain about the weird guys at their local card store.
I mean, a valid complaint for all genders of Magic the Gathering.
Yes,
enjoyment.
It was the one detail in the story that really rang true. And she's like, hey, did you notice that the card store put up that that sign that said you're not allowed in if you stink? And the boy was like, oh, yeah, I guess that is a thing.
It is logical that card game players would stink.
Huh, that's weird. Yeah, I never thought about that before. But in every other way, this is just your typical, like, the boy can't believe that, like, the, like, slutty girl in class has a hobby kind of story, you know, just the kind of grimy shit. And she's into him for no reason. But I'm sure you'll love that one. Very quick read. I read the aforementioned Labyrinth. I also read, I went back, and this will be interesting to you, I finally caught up with No Name. Remember that one?
Yeah. What's going on with that?
It's been steadily releasing chapters. As far as I know, we're almost at like 9 or 10 chapters, I believe. And that one is just a straight continuation from the one shot that came out like a long time ago. And I'm really enjoying it. That's the story about a world where a government agency controls all names of people because bestowing a name on a person also gives them the power of that name. So there are characters named like Ursa, right, who get bear powers.
I was about to ask, so like does the government naming power turn them into furries? Because that's what I'm seeing here.
Some of them do. There is a fun element where one of the kind of little side stories is the bear girl goes to a bear fighting tournament where she fights all different kinds of people with bear powers. One of the girls like develops bear armor. One of the girls is like a bear necromancer. She like releases the skeleton of a bear. One guy turns into a bear. But there's lots of different manifestations of each of these name powers, right? The other guy is he is a dog wielder. I forget his name, but you know, it's something like Canis or whatever.
Dog wielder?
Yeah, and he has dogs, sort of like in Jujutsu Kaisen. He like has these dog summons, right? These dog familiars.
He's got demon dog summons that he can control.
Yeah, and he's got three of them. One's really good at smelling. One's a healer for some reason, and one is an attack dog who, when he couldn't control his powers, bit him on the fucking face. Seems like, man, that's not good. Maybe these power shit is not good.
Listen, you're supposed to put down a dog that bites faces.
Yeah, but it's like a spectral dog. So what do you do then?
Well, I don't know. We were having this conversation earlier. What counts as alive versus spectral and undead?
It's a tough question. I also read a bunch of one-shots, including one called Geidara, which is about a kid who moves into a house with a big demon living in the attic. It's very fun. I read that because it's a story by Terada Atoru, who is the guy who wrote that weird cat cohabitation manga I talked a long time about, where
the masterful house cat wants to neg his roommate.
No, it's more like Gyaru and Cthulhu, where a guy rescues a little baby kitten one day and he takes care of it. And at some point, like 6 months in, maybe he notices that it's growing a lot faster than a cat should. And it starts getting weirder and weirder. And by a year in, he realizes that, no, that's not a cat. It is not a cat at all. It is something else, which is a great story. I really like it.
Oh, I remember this. I think I called it Eldritch Clifford.
It is. It is exactly that. Yes. It's really good. And this one shot is really good. That story is called The Story of How I Found My Cat, which is a great, just banal, unassuming name.
That sounds like something that Junji Ito would write, which is funny because he did write that totally banal, like, autobio comic just about his regular-ass cat that he has.
Yes, yes. It's great. I really like that kind
of
story.
If we're doing one-shots with this thing, I'm going to throw that out there because that's one of my favorites.
It's great. I also read, I went ahead and read, obviously I've talked about Gachi Akuta like a million times. It still fucking rules. It's great. Watch out for that anime. I finally went back and read Yurana K's one-shot called Shikido, which is a very straightforward story about a duo of sword-wielding students who there's a hot-headed one and like a cool one, and they're kind of like rivals, but they're also friends. Just a short story about them doing stuff, and it's great. It looks incredible. K's art style came out like totally fully formed and just looks badass. Like, it's really, really great. It's like these one-shots are only like usually somewhere between like 40 to 80 pages, maybe.
Yeah. You know what? I'm looking at Shikido right now, and you know what? There's a lot of elements. It's not exactly the same, but there's a lot of elements to the art style of something like Suicide Girl, right? It's got that very stylized, like cartoony look to it.
Yes.
While still being like dramatic and angular. This is cool looking stuff. I like
this. It's really, really cool. It's one of those manga that like genuinely I think pushes the boundaries of what manga can look like. In that vein, I also read a story by Shiki Koyo, a one-shot called Mercy. And I read this one, I think it was very notable because this is someone who is obviously very influenced by one of my favorite mangaka, Nihei Tsutomu, the Blame guy.
Which is the Blame guy, and what's his other comic?
The newest one is Tower Dungeon.
Yeah, Tower Dungeon.
Which is incredible. It's so good. It continues to be fantastic. I love it. But Shiki Koyo clearly took a lot of inspiration, especially for this one shot. They draw a very dense, dark, overwhelming city with like endless bowels of shadows and characters who don't speak very often and just grotesque human figures and just like an endless series of like thick syrupy gloom. I don't know if that makes it sound appealing, but it's like it's really good. It's really good and very cool.
No, it's, I mean, all of these things, I'm not going to say they're derivative of each other, but one of the ones that I really like in that kind of sprawling cityscape kind of art style. Have you read Kowloon Walled City before?
No, I have not.
I think the other title for it is Kowloon Generic Romance, was the translated title.
I'm familiar with that one. I haven't gotten around to it.
Yeah. Same thing. I love that. Oh, I'm totally blanking on the Kyu Hayashida.
Die Dark.
Well, Die Dark, but the other one, the big one we were just talking about.
Dorohedoro.
Dorohedoro. Okay, sorry, folks. My brain is broken right now. I am, in fact, robo-tripping on tryptophan from all the turkey I've been eating. So bear with me here. But yeah, that sprawling, dark city that just goes on forever in all directions, both up and down. I love that shit.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And Nihei Tsutomu is the absolutely unbeatable champion of that vibe. Just like,
yeah,
so good. And Mercy is really good, too. I followed up with Shiki Koyu's serialization, which is called Grand Metal Organs, which is a completely different story. And I don't like quite as much, but it's interesting. I get the vibe that this is the kind of thing that is going to be immediately canceled, which I get the vibe from a lot of this stuff. You know, a weird thing about reading all these one-shots, especially the ones that like won some kind of award or whatever,
mm-hmm.
is a lot of these artists either like finally get serialized like years and years later, like sometimes 4 or 5 years after like publication of these one-shots, or just never ever publish again.
You know, I was just thinking about that. It's a surprisingly similar life cycle to say a comedian that's trying to get on SNL. Right. you start off with a one shot and you submit it to all of these publishing competitions, and hopefully one of them picks it up to give it an award and give it some recognition. And then maybe a larger publisher will say, we want to adapt that into a light novel, or we want to have you turn that into an ongoing series. And then hopefully it'll get enough fan base. Right. To get like an actual printed publication, like actual Kodansha volumes put out. And then maybe if you're really lucky after that point, you'll break into the Shueisha top 20 or whatever.
Yeah, it's interesting. It seems like sometimes these mangaka maybe have like one thing they're really pushing for, like a one shot. And then after that, they're just like, oh, this industry is fucked. I have no interest in continuing this work, which totally valid.
Totally valid. I sympathize with that.
Yeah.
100%.
It's just a shame sometimes because I read stuff that is like, I love this. Like, genuinely, every once in a while, I fall in love with like a short little manga or something that got canceled after like 4 or 5 chapters, and it genuinely breaks my heart to see that like publication finish tag on something like that, you know?
Oh, I know what you mean. The Traveling Gyaru just got canceled after 10 chapters. I was heartbroken.
Yeah, wasn't slutty enough.
Wasn't slutty enough. Wasn't she was doing her enough. Own thing. She was too much of a powerful, independent female character.
Yeah. Well, here's a good example. She didn't bounce off. She ended up doing other stuff, but this was really interesting because she debuted with a story called Yuku Tokoro. Have no idea what that means. By Higuchi Asa. She wrote this story in 1998, which is a really goofy but also very sad and melancholy story about a gay boy in high school who falls in love with his straight classmate, and their kind of like really fraught friendship that comes from that, because he's very aggressively pursues this straight kid who does not want a romantic relationship with him, but still recognizes that this gay kid is having a very hard time in life as a gay kid in 90s Japan in high school, and becomes like a close friend with him, even though that this relationship is very tough. And man, that is, that's tough subject matter. That's
well,
a tough
it's,
one.
It's the subject matter by itself almost requires more time to unpack it in an adequate way than, you know, a one shot usually gives these authors, right?
Yeah, it would be interesting to see it expounded on. This one's only like, this is 90 pages of this comic. And I think she does an incredibly good job. These characters are more emotionally complex than a lot of series manage to do in 300 chapters, you know? there's a lot packed in here and a lot of really complicated emotions. And again, like, I think not to continually harp on, like, you know, how homophobic culture was back in the 90s, but like, it was bad. It was bad everywhere. Not to say it's all good now, but it was pretty bad. And having a complicated story like this, where it's not kind of the syrupy fantasy of some BL, we've seen, which is a lot of, you know, escapism kind of stuff, which is kind of the, I feel like when a BL gets really popular these days, it tends to be in that mode.
You know, and I feel like that is maybe a symptom of the fact that, like, currently BL stuff, especially within Japan, but also outside of it, like, its main consumer base is mostly straight women.
Yeah. Well, I will say, because I've been chastised before, it is more complicated than that.
I'm sure it is. And I don't mean to reduce it to, you know, just a statement like that, but that seems to be my impression of the BL market, is that it's mostly marketed to a female audience.
Yes. Well, I think what happens is, you know, we get these publications in Japan that are aggressively demographic focused, right? There's just straight up like, and these are where like shonen and shoujo come from, right? Is that there are girls magazines and boys magazines, and they're not shy about saying, hey boys, here's a boy magazine for you boys. It's not for the girls. The girls can read their girl magazines. Here's a boy one for you boys. And then, like, because romance is typically associated with feminine interests, BL, which is a lot of romance stories, as you can imagine, drift over to the shoujo magazines because that's where romance lives, right? So you can picture a lot of people going, not even gay boys, like anybody who has more interest in something outside of like fighting manga would be buying shoujo magazines because that's where this stuff just ends up living. But I think that because they are explicitly marketed as like, here's the popular girls manga, we can end up making educated assumptions about like who the market is for these stories.
Yeah.
That sucks though. That's a really dumb way to distribute manga, and it kind of reinforces my whole thing about how, and tying into all these one-shots that I read, really reinforces my belief that they need like independent publishing where mangaka can write a completed work without having to be serialized or published as a one-shot or whatever. There needs to be a third way. I'm a third way mangaist.
I totally agree with your concept here. And then once this third way has grown to a profitable size, we'll sell it to Sony.
Sony, you need to buy your way into this market where people write 300 page mangas and then just release them. You know, could be a good way to avoid this horrible affliction of like reading 10 chapters of something and then it gets canceled. We could dodge that. We could stop that horrible sickness.
If there's one tragedy in the modern world that we have the power and the ability to stop right now, it's to stop good series from getting canceled prematurely.
That is the whole point of this fucking show. That is the only thing I care about, is like, please read the shit I like so it continues and doesn't get canceled like everything else. I
can't go through another Super Baby, dude. I can't do it.
Being a fan of Nihei Tsutomo as much as I have and reading endless serializations that just stop in the middle of a story, it's hurting me, man. It is hurting my heart. Let's wrap up. But do you have a favorite story that got canceled prematurely?
Got canceled prematurely. I don't know if it's prematurely yet, but I have talked several times on this show about how much I was enjoying Shibatarian, a weird little psychological horror movie.
Oh yeah, about a guy, and it just got shit canned.
It just got shit canned after 36 chapters, and again, heartbroken. So that's got to be up there for me.
Yeah, I feel a little bad about that. I think one of mine is I was reading. I mean, I have a bunch of these, like I said, but I was reading a short horror story called Mashira by Ichimizu Toru, which was about a boy who returns to his tiny little village where his grandparents raised him, and the village gets attacked by ravenous baboons. It rules.
Wait, are they drowning?
They're not drowning. They're drowning in blood. They just attack.
Okay, so these are just regular baboons.
Well, the story starts implying that they are not regular baboons, that there's some shit going on. Like, maybe these are some crazy baboons with some crazy shit going on.
Naturally, baboons are already bloodthirsty demon monsters straight from hell, so I don't know how much worse they could make them.
Yeah. Well, the story got canceled, so I'll never know. I really liked it, though. There's also one that only got one chapter, I will say. That was called Suko Yaka Naru Tokibo Kakeru Tokibo. I don't know what that means.
Kokomo. The Beach Boys song.
It was about it started off as one of these gambler death games. A woman goes and finds herself an expert gambler and proposes to him on the spot, because her insane father is putting together a death game where the daughter whose husband-wife pair is the best at gambling gets to take the entire inheritance, which is a very simple setup. Obviously, I am a sucker for that kind of thing, but also this one was, I thought, written very cleverly, and the art style was really great. And it just, I sat there reading, I read the first chapter going like, oh, I love this. And then I just sat there, go, wait, where's chapter two?
No.
I come back like a month later, like, where is chapter two coming? Or, you know, I come back four months later. Hey, did anybody heard anything about chapter two of Suko Yaka Naru Tokimo Kakeru Tokimo? No? Anybody? No. Okay, great. So that was very disappointing to me.
Okay, well, speaking of just unceremoniously ending,
bye.
Yeah, bye.
Bye. Imagine if the Joker was like wandered around looking cool as hell, and then he revealed his horrible face.